You're listening to VO Stories, episode 53. I'm your host, voiceover talent and trainer, Tina Zaremba. Today I'm talking with Hugh Klitsky. Hugh not only runs castings at a major bi-coastal agency, he's a coach and teacher to students across the country. He not only is a super patient guy, you'll hear it took us a few tries to get this episode successfully recorded. He's crazy dedicated and driven. Hugh's directed over 125,000 voiceover auditions, and that number is growing. That's crazy. So listen in as Hugh shares the four key pillars for voiceover success, how he helps his students connect to their personal voice, and much more. Here's our chat. Hugh Klitsky with two syllables. Did I say that right?
Almost. It's with a K, Klitsky.
Hugh Klitsky. I've said it three times. It feels like I've talked to you three times. Who would have known?
Well, hey, you know.
Here we are again. It's like deja vu.
All over again for the first time.
So I'm going to ask you, like, for the very first time, even though I've asked you this before, how did you find yourself, Hugh, running casting at a major bi-coastal agency? Because they don't talk about that at Career Day.
True, they don't. They don't talk about voiceovers at Career Day either.
No.
My background is in music. I'm a composer. I have a master's degree in studio composition from SUNY Purchase. And I had from there in 2002 and was working a bunch of different kinds of music jobs in order to keep everything together. I was assisting on a new commissioned ballet for the American Ballet Theater. I was working for a Baroque trumpet player who was receiving faxes of 17th century Baroque manuscript from Germany, and he was in the process of turning all of that into contemporary manuscript for contemporary players to play, so I was assisting him with that. All kinds of things, working in studios, doing orchestrations, I had cut a jingle demo, all different kinds of things. The jingle demo alone is a whole story unto itself. That being said, all of my freelance work had kind of all at once dried up, as it has a tendency to do sometimes, which I'm sure you know.
Peaks and valleys.
All the time. Yeah. All the time. I found myself selling cell phones at Radio Shack to keep it together. What was a seasonal job was becoming something stretching out into the new year. And that was a really bad time. But I got a phone call from a guy whose feature I had scored. And he said to me, look, I'm DPing somebody else's film right now. Yeah, it's about a 45-minute art film, and it's a little bit weird, but I think he needs a score. He doesn't have any money. Do you want to take a look at it? I know you're looking for something to do. And I was desperate to do anything to take my mind off of what I was doing at the time. So I went and checked out this guy's film. It was interesting and different, but the acting performances were really good, and that's a very germane part of the story here. So I said to the guy, yes, I will score your film. And I understand that you have no budget, but I don't work for free. And if people can't afford to pay me, they do me favors. And I looked the guy dead in the face and I said, I don't even know if you can help me with this, but what I want more than anything else in the world right now is a better day job than the one I have, because my day job sucks. And he looks at me and he says, okay, what about my old job? I said, I don't know what you do. He was the voice casting director at the leading bi-coastal talent agency. He was there for about a year. He got married. He was, he'd quit, and he knew they were looking around for somebody. So he scored his film. He set up an interview for me. I interviewed on a Friday at 10 in the morning, and they called me at 3 in the afternoon, and they offered me the job. And I said, okay, great. What am I going to do now?
I thought you were going to say it was the jingle demo that led to this job.
No, not at all. Not at all. This was in the early 2000s. When I got to the leading bi-coastal talent agency, I watched the person that trained me, not the person that had the job before me, but the person that trained me. I watched him run sessions. I watched actors come in. I watched them approach script. And the process made a lot of sense to me. I understood what was going on. And the first thing I really understood when I was listening was that I said, boy, there's a lot of stuff going on here. These people are really layering in all these kinds of subtexts into everything they do. This is not what I expected, but it's interesting. And I just kept listening and paying attention. I heard a little bit of what the guy had said to people, but not a whole lot. I mean, he was good. He was good, but he was also kind of tired of it. Mm-hmm. The guy who had that job before me, he said to me that he got tired of hearing the same script and the same words over and over again all day long. I've never had that problem. I've always been fascinated by what people do with the words rather than just the words themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that's always kept me interested and engaged in the work. If I tune out and I'm not paying attention to what the actor is doing, I start to get bored. But if I concentrate on their performance, then I'm always engaged. So I'm always focused on what the actor is doing. That I figured out pretty quickly.
Do you find that your background in music helps you in this industry? Because I know a lot of voiceover talent that are singers do really well in this. So I'm just wondering if your background in composition.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a combination of a couple of different things. I think that in composition, because it forces you to listen in an abstract way. Mm-hmm. But also I have a background in conducting. And in conducting, you have to be able to talk about sound in specific and yet broad enough terms that you can convey a specific idea about an abstract incident. Mm-hmm. I also have I'm certified to teach music K-12. So that comes in well in just in the idea of being able to break something down and explain it simply and directly. Yep. And I was an equity stage manager for a while. So I understand the actor as, I don't like this, but I understand the actor as an animal. I understand the need to have certain things organized in a certain way. I've always been able to be the calm guy in the middle of a crowd of people, especially when all of these people have all these different kinds of needs. And the best stage managers I ever saw were just as cool as the other side of the pillow, just focused and paying attention to everything going on at once, but they couldn't be ruffled. And I always admired that. So from those folks, I learned that. So a lot of different skills come into play into what I do all day long, 8 hours a day for over a decade at the agency where I work.
Being on the other side of the glass, what have you seen? Well, first of all, you've been doing this since the early 2000s. So how many hours do you think you've logged as a
casting director, I guess? Yeah. I don't even know those hours. I mean, if you want to talk about like the peaks of things, the most number of sessions I've directed in a single day or just organized, had my hands in a single day has been 20 in my calendar in an 8-hour workday. The largest number of scripts I've directed individually, separate scripts, was 27 separate Ooh. Scripts. The largest number of individual people I've seen in a single day has been 89 people.
Oh my word. I don't know how you stay present with everybody.
So I've gotten better at doing it. It's a muscle like anything else. You have to, you know, learn how to pace yourself. You have to be willing to just stop for a minute, you know, loosen your tie and just go, okay, take a sip of water, next person. And then you just kind of just readjust periodically as you go. I sat down with an intern and we did the math and we figured out that by now I've directed over 125,000 auditions and that number grows every single workday.
I think we can say you're an expert then, according to Malcolm Gladwell and then some, if his theory is right, of 10,000 hours.
Malcolm and his precious 10,000 hour theory.
Yeah. So being on the other side of the glass, you've seen some amazing voiceover talent. Have you seen any patterns as to what's, you know, people who book over and over, do they have any type of similar characteristics or traits?
Well, it's like anything else. The more you do it, the better you get. How do you get better? You get better by auditioning a lot. How do you audition a lot? If you tend to book more, you tend to audition more. So that's a reinforcing cycle by itself. Mm-hmm. I think that people that book more understand market. I think they understand what is in the marketplace and being sold now, right now, today, this month, this quarter, this year. Mm-hmm. I think they understand that. I think that they never take things for granted professionally, that when they receive an email for a particular project, they'll make sure they read and understand all the parts of it, all the way up and down. They'll understand the direction. They'll understand the description of the casting. They'll understand the script. And with that, they'll also have a knowledge of what their part, what they're auditioning with, in their imagination how that fits into the greater whole of what goes on. I mean, think about it, right? Voiceover in almost every kind of professional opportunity, a money-making opportunity, accompanies something else. Mm-hmm. Except in audiobooks, granted. But still, voiceover narrates a commercial. And we don't announce anything anymore, right? We narrate. We underline an idea. We present things. The era of the big-voiced, grand voiceover announcer has really ceased to exist. And it's only used for parody and satire. Somebody working right now understands that. So when they see words like authoritative, or they see words like can cut through a music bed, the contemporary voiceover actor will understand what that means in the contemporary context. They won't take that too far. Mm-hmm. And I think the successful voiceover actor also understands themselves and then themselves relative to the work. Like if somebody says, you know, we need a woman who has a low pitch to their voice or has gravel in their voice, that eliminates a whole portion of the overall world of voices that could go out for that. And the right voiced person is the person to audition for that of a certain age with certain qualities. Some people who naturally are sound gregarious when they talk, if they're told to be happy or cheerful, if they go too far with that direction, they're going to sound saccharine or treacly, and they're not going to be believed. While at the same time, if somebody says speak with authority and they have a natural authority to their voice already, if they go too far with it, they're just going to sound unpleasant and condescending and, God, frankly, like a dick. So it's just, you have to understand yourself. You have to understand what's going on in the marketplace. You have to understand the kinds of work that's being done, your role in that kind of work, if that makes sense when I'm using the word role that way. And then you also have to be able to record well and get it all done in a timely fashion. So the people that can really put all of those things together, roughly like four things, that's the neat thing about us having to re-record all this is that I was thinking about it last night and I realized, right, it really kind of comes down to four things and not just three. There's casting, there's direction, there's text, and there's also recording. So you put all of those things together, right? And when all of those are in alignment, there's a friction that's created. And that friction, that excitement that people can feel, those are the people that can get hired.
So say it again. It's
sure. I think it comes down to casting, right? Mm-hmm. Which is fairly inviolate. You're a 35 to 45 year old African American man, or you're not. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're a 25 to 35 year old female from Savannah, from Georgia, or you're not. Okay. You have a certain kind of timbre naturally in your voice, or you don't. Casting is pretty inviolate. Okay. So you really have to understand who you are. Then direction is the way they want it done. So you have to then be able to interpret direction in a way that makes sense for the contemporary marketplace. Then there's text, which are the words that get said. And then by being able to understand the way those words are constructed, because voiceover, the text used in all kinds of voiceover is very specifically written, very specifically crafted, and there are certain structural guidelines that are present in the text in order to make the ideas sound clear on the ear. If you take a commercial that was written in the 50s or in the 60s in print media, and you do a pretty light pass-through edit on it, it's amazing to me how very similar those commercials are in print, the text in print, relative to commercials being written today. It's not that different. Sure, they're a little bit shorter now, but the text is often the same in the sense of certain structural ideas, the way the ideas of
problem solution. Is that what you're talking about?
Problem and solution. Not just that, but it's about the fact, the way that adjectives are used, mm-hmm. the fact that things are organized in groups of three, the fact that there's sometimes ideas of comparison and contrast, sometimes ideas grow and escalate, the way that brand names appear at the very beginning and the very, very end. In psychology, that's called the primary effect and the proximity effect. All of those ideas are just still being exploited today in different ways. You could still identify them, though, as you look at older copy, taking out some of the dross that isn't required anymore. And then you have to be able to record. You have to be able to record well. You have to be able to record clearly. And then you have to deliver that thing promptly.
Yeah, and that's a key right there, promptly. I mean, you and I, as folks know or don't know, we recorded this last night and it did not go, the quality wasn't that great, so we did it again tonight. But you were talking about that the promptness, not just promptness, but getting it in quickly makes a difference in someone's booking ratio.
It's no surprise to me that people who submit earlier book more. It really, really doesn't. A friend of mine, though, in the last 24 hours, actually, she runs a really good Facebook group, and she wrote on there that she had polled her buyers. She said that the first thing her buyers look for is audio quality.
Yeah.
That they'll listen, and if the audio quality sounds off, they won't get past the read.
Yeah.
They won't even really get to the point where they're listening to the read itself.
Yep.
That's intense. That's really, really intense. So if you're on your own, if you're independent, you know, you don't go out and, hey, casting offices, once they close, other ones don't reopen, right?
Right. Well, I mean, even in the major cities, I'm auditioning from home. You just, that's the way it is.
Yep. Yep. And a lot of that is the rise of technology. When I first started, being able to record like this was impossible. Just the technology hadn't been invented yet. But with the iPhone coming in, and then with GarageBand being released, and then with USB mics getting better and better, what gradually began to happen was that people who had never perceived themselves as being able to edit audio, being able to self-record, let alone self-direct, suddenly we're trying it for the first time and suddenly realized, hey, I don't have to get onto the 405 to go record a 3-line audition for something that's going to take me 90 minutes to get there, 2 hours to wait, and 90 minutes to get back after spending 3 minutes in the booth with an engineer in a room full of 40 people.
Yeah.
But so much of that has moved into people's closets and people's home offices and their bedrooms and things like that. And I think that creates a different kind of performance and a different kind of performer as well, where you really have to be like a self-cleaning oven. You have to be able to take care of yourself completely. Well, not every great actor is necessarily great at doing that, because actors are trained to respond to stimuli. They're trained to interact. They're trained to listen to somebody else, to take visual cues off of people, let alone verbal cues off people. And I'm sitting in my closet in Queens, in my walk-in closet, looking around and thinking, wow, I know people who spend 10 hours a day in a space just like this, talking to themselves.
Let me ask you, as a coach, because I know you also do coaching and mm-hmm. you run classes. Mm-hmm. What is the quickest way you help your students that are auditioning from home mm-hmm. get to that place now that they're having to self-direct?
Well, it's something you have to practice. It's something that you have to learn how to practice. And I've developed some exercises in order to be able to harness the personal voice. I've also developed ability to some techniques of being able to analyze copy separate from direction, and then a means of putting all of those ideas together. Some people have said to me, I remember once a very successful voiceover artist said, can you believe some people actually practice this thing? And I looked at her and I said, well, our mutual friend, mm-hmm. he practices every Sunday. And she's like, what? I said, mm-hmm, every Sunday. He spends at his time after lunch, after dinner, before bed, with a bucket of old copy, pulling it out and just reading it over aloud to himself. I don't know if he records it or not, just to get the rhythm and the feel and to be able to go through these ideas again so that he's ready mentally to face his week of auditions. He was like, I had no idea. I said, right. And that's fine. You know, you have a background in performance, so you approach it very, very differently. For you, it's extremely organic and extremely of the moment. For him, it's a little bit more methodical than that, where he's had to develop a practice. It's like every other kind of acting method. There are so many different ways to get there, to achieve a result. And I don't think I'm the be-all, end-all insofar as coaching, because there are plenty of people who choose to approach coaching in very, very different ways. And I think that's fine. I think there's a lot of different ways to get there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Can you share one of your techniques that you used with your students to help them get to that, the truth of their voice? Because that's a challenge for a lot of us. Sure.
One technique I adapted when I had heard about it, I always forget the name of the author of the book, but it's a book called How to Stop Acting. And I think the author's last name might be Gusman or something like that. I'm never sure exactly. He has a technique that's outlined in the book and called lifting the words off the page or something like that. Mm-hmm. In the book, he describes working with, there's a lot of name dropping in the book, but he describes taking text, even if it was in a coaching session from a single word or a single line, and coaching an actor through what language would you personally, Kevin Kline, he worked with Kevin Kline on Fish Called Wanda. He talks all about that in the book. What language would you use to these sentences, these phrases into your own language? And it's a painstaking process of creating a paraphrase. How do you paraphrase text into your own words? Yeah. So I adopted that and I said, okay, I invite actors to come into the class and I say, bring two sets of song lyrics with you that you have some sort of a personal relationship with. Okay, so they bring in, I said, look, just the lyrics, just the words, not music. Great. Song lyrics to me are interesting because they're a very tight, concise, to the point form of structured language. And I invite them to go into the booth and I pick out four lines out of them and I say, okay, first thing you're going to do is state your name. You're going to read those four lines. Great. And I start to guide them through ideas of means of which putting those four lines into their own words. I start to guide them through simple ideas about, you know, if you were going to say these words to somebody, who would you say those words to? How would you rephrase those ideas to make them as personal as possible to that conversation and that relationship you have with that person? And I walk them through it. And then I have them replace certain words. I say, okay, you can't say the word sweetheart, let's say. You can't say that anymore. You have to put somebody's name in there instead.
Wow. Okay. I bet that anchors them.
It does. But it also, some actors get a little bit adrift in that too. But I always try to swing it around so that they really understand. And I walk them through, like in the course of 8 people doing it, I might walk the whole class through about 32 or maybe 40 different ideas of here are ways for you to paraphrase song lyrics. And then by the end, they're after 2 or 3 pass-throughs, they're saying things that are completely their own, but still tangentially related to the ideas that are in the song. And then at the end, I say, okay, now read it word for word. And it's amazing how different the first take is from the last take. And I record the whole thing.
Oh, that's nice. Then they can hear.
They can hear the net result of the process. They don't have to take my word for it.
Right.
Because then, and then if somebody gives permission, I'll sit there and I'll play their first version word for word. And they'll play their last version word for word. And it's astonishing. I don't give line readings. I don't talk about phrasing. I try to figure out ways in order so that the internal life of the actor can come out. And the thing about song lyrics is that you know them. Then they pick songs that they know. So you're not struggling trying to get your mind around what these words are. You kind of already know those words. Mm-hmm. Then after doing that, the second hour of the class is everybody gets the same piece of commercial copy. And then we do it again, where So we sit there, they'll state their name, they'll read the commercial word for word. And then I say, okay, now I want you to go through and I want you to start putting this into your own language. And so then I guide them through that. And you can't say the name of the brand anymore. You have to pick something else. You can't say these things anymore. What if you're talking to your wife versus talking to your sister? What if, and then I go through all of these different ideas with them. And then after three or four takes of them putting it into their own language, they read the commercial again, word for word, and then they can viscerally feel the difference. Again, I'm never giving line readings. I'm never talking about upturning, downturning, phrasing ideas or things like that, because ultimately the only way an actor is going to believe something outside of themselves, they have no emotional relationship to it, is for them to somehow grab something out of themselves and move that through language. And by paraphrasing an idea, it teaches them, how do I sound like I'm emotionally invested in talking about soap?
How can folks learn more about you and your teaching?
I do have a website, voiceoverfortheactor.com, okay, or VO4TA.com. That's a little simpler.
Thanks for listening in. Join me next week, where we'll be talking about success. What is it? What does it mean to you? What does it mean to me? Come listen in. Until then, here's to owning our voices.